Good evening, everybody. It is Sunday, August 6th, 2017, and you are listening to Three Geek Senate, special edition Game of Thrones, special edition. Hi, my name is Brian J. Cano.
And I'm Robert Buxar.
And we literally just finished watching Game of Thrones, and we have to talk about it. So we're going to bring you guys in on it, and let's get to it. Rob, WTF?
I don't know where to go with that. I wasn't ready for it.
As it was happening, I wanted to hop on Twitter, but I refrained because I'm thinking, I'm like, let me just hold it, because I know there's a bunch of people who are still catching up, and Paul, goddammit, like, urgh.
See, that's the problem. So, like, with my stuff automatically being linked, my Twitter's automatically linked to my Facebook. I don't have a tremendous amount of people on there, but I also don't want to fuck people over that happen to be on there looking for stuff. So I like to write vaguely. But enough to where if anybody is watching, they're going to kind of get in the gist of what I said. If you can jump on board with a vague comment, you're in the scene. So, I mean, you have a good idea. But, damn, I mean, there was a couple of times. There's sometimes you just want to tweet something that's just like exactly how it happened in the scene. And it's like, oh, my
well,
God.
I had three comments for the episode. Yeah. One was, yes, when Arya returned home.
Yes.
Holy shit. For the dragon showing up, and
God,
no, for Jaime falling into the drink.
No!
But, no, oh baby chicky!
Oh, no, rubber chicky!
Rubber chicky!
No, come back!
Oh, do-do-do-do, rubber Jaime!
This is going to just become a whole Muppet scenario.
Mark, 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 mark. We should just do an entire episode in Swedish Chef, release it overseas, and see who gets it.
I want to do that now. We need to make that happen. We need to make that a thing.
Oh, you know what that's like? Do you remember Saturday Night Live when they would have Tonto, Frankenstein, and...
Oh my God! That was Phil Hartman as Frankenstein.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
It was John Lovitz as Tonto.
Yeah,
Phil Hartman as Frankenstein. Who was the third person? But they were all three barely intelligible.
Right. I cannot remember who the third person, but I do remember. I remember the bit.
And they were singing Christmas carols, and I remember being hysterical because none of them were intelligible.
Yeah.
it might as well have been Swedish Chef.
Right. I can't think of a Silent Night. Oh, wait, see, Silent Night. It'd be like, I'm not even gonna...
Game of Morks.
I'm glad I opened a beer for this.
All right, so let's get to it. This is going to be a pretty much aftershock episode of Game of Thrones season. What are we at?
Season 7, episode 4.
Season 7, episode 4, episode The Spoils of War, and holy shit.
Yeah, that is definitely... I mean, just... That's the best way to put it. I mean,
we have to do this podcast now to decompress from everything that happens, and this is very akin to The Talking Dead after a very harrowing episode of The Walking Dead. Chris Hardwick comes on, he's like, "All right, guys, we're going to talk about it. We're going to work through it. I got to work through this, man."
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it was just so much. It was like so much happening, so much action, and just so much excitement, just finally seeing certain things happen and people come together that I've been wanting to see happen for a long, you know, 7 seasons. And finally it's like
7 seasons. And I mean, in the last 6 seasons, things have happened. There've been political machinations. There's been battles, but they kind of have been few and far in between. But now this season, what we're getting 7 episodes, maybe 8, and things are happening quickly. So in the past few episodes where, all right, Jon Snow has been summoned. Oh, he's there. Oh, he's talking.
Right.
In seasons past, that would have been a journey that would have taken 3 episodes. And we would have skipped one in between to go visit a secondary character. Now, things are happening so quickly, I'm really satisfied with the pace.
I'm watching it now. like, I'm glad that we had the stories unfold the way that they unfolded as the seasons went on, but the pacing now makes me wish that they would have been doing this kind of all along. I mean, of course, that would have been probably less seasons, but it would have kind of gotten more to the meat of what everybody wanted to see. But it also would have detracted from kind of the thing that everybody loves about the show, the depth of the characters and the stories and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword.
And here's the thing. At this point, now, when I first was introduced to Game of Thrones, I was on the road with Honor Collector. We were filming season one. Season one of Game of Thrones was beginning to air. I said, oh, hey, look, there's one of my favorite actors. And I figured, okay, it'll be as if Boromir never died. Let me see what his story is about. Let me see what happens.
But yet, it always pans out.
And it always happens.
Sean Bean died.
I'm a huge, huge Sean Bean fan. And I figured, hey, I'm on the road. I'm watching Sean Bean. This is like the Boromir life at home story. And I picked up the book and I read it as the show was airing. So I was always maybe a chapter or two ahead. In a show like Game of Thrones, high fantasy, in a world we're unfamiliar with terms and names that are foreign, it was useful for me to read the book because as I watched the show, all the complex descriptions I've already read, so I understood the scenes. And on the flip side, as I was reading, I could picture the actors. So all those crazy names, I now had a visualization to go with it. So it really helped me in those first few years.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you definitely got a leg up on me in that, because with the Game of Thrones, like, I got the only reason I got into it at the time when it first aired, this one chick that I happened to be just dating, she brought it up to me. She's like, oh, this Game of Thrones show is coming on. I had no idea what it was. And I was like, oh, it sounds cool. You know, she's telling me about dragons and fantasy. And I was like, all right, yeah, I would definitely want to check it out. And I caught the first episode when it aired, and I was hooked. Boobs. And I was in from that point. But I don't have the book knowledge. I haven't gone and delved into the book realm. So everything I know and everything I've experienced has been purely just what HBO has given me on screen.
It's HBO, so you get boobs and limp penises. Right. So right, you know, there's right, something right, yeah. for everyone.
whatever your choice is, I mean, that's it. Yeah, I mean,
floppy dicks, nice tits, hey.
and butts.
Everybody wins.
And then some people don't have those parts.
Hey, see? So we're addressing everyone. Take that, Trump.
Right. Right.
Now, here's another thing that is thrilling for me in this season, and actually last season too, but more this season. Mm-hmm. We're beyond the books. We're past what the books have detailed. The last thing that happened in A Dance with Dragons, book 5, Jon Snow gets shanked at the wall. That was the last thing that happens.
Really?
Jon Snow dies, and that's what we've been left with in the books.
Well, so that's what I've been reading. So I guess that's what the whole thing with the author.
George R. R. Martin.
George R. R. Martin. Oh my god, I just blanked out his name. I was like R. R. Martin. I was like, R. there's something before R. R.
He's a pirate. R.
R. R. Martin.
R. R. Martin.
He's coming in. Anyway, so, but I mean, I knew that I had been reading, like, people had been clamoring for, like, what was going to happen and where the story was going, and people just kept wanting more and more and more. And then they were afraid that the seasons weren't going to continue because the books hadn't been written.
Yeah.
But then he backed off and he's letting this play out. And then he's writing the books now that take place.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going to fill in all those gaps in between.
Well, you know what? This is very much like another epic story that I'm a big fan of. I've never been hugely into anime, but the one show that I love is Full Metal Alchemist. Now, Full Metal Alchemist is an anime. It came out a number of years ago. When it first premiered, it ran concurrently with the manga. Now, it ran side by side, and the same thing happened. The show got to the point where the manga hadn't been written yet, so they're like, oh, we have to keep producing episodes. All right, we're taking the story our own way. And they diverted, so they kept going. The manga went a different way, but you had this alternate ending, and I thought it was a brilliant show. Mm-hmm. Years had passed, maybe two or three, And a lot of purists said, hey, we want to see the story as it was in the manga. So they did another complete series called Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, which follows the manga exactly. And while elements are similar and some of the storylines are the same, it's a completely different animal. Wow. You could watch both shows and go, wow, am I in an alternate universe? And they were both highly entertaining.
But so basically, so both of the shows were the same show, but one show was held true to the manga.
Yes.
And but it was kind of, in essence, the story was similar. So you got two different series.
It was like a Hydra, you know, the body was the same, but the heads veered off in different directions.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I mean, like, so the only thing that I ever, like, I liked anime and stuff like that, but I never delved into the series, but... except for there's the one series that I regularly watched was Dragon Ball Z. And, you know, okay. It was like Dragon Ball Z. And I was going to make a comment about some of this stuff in here being almost like a Dragon Ball Z episode, not because of the content, but because of how they did it. You watch a Dragon Ball Z episode. I don't know if you ever watched that or not, but there were some fights. It would take place over like three episodes.
Oh my.
So it was kind of like this whole thing that was going on. And with this, and we were talking about taking the filler out, you know, and getting kind of to the meat of the action and stop drawing it out. This is very much doing this, where the rest of it was very much you would take that side trip and, you know, him going across the ocean and him coming to see Daenerys. You know, you would have gotten a lot more.
Well, there's that. And it's one of those things, because, again, it's a TV show. It's HBO. Right. It's premium cable. There's certain things that they're going to do. Believe me. I love breasts. There's no time for them. I feel like anytime we're in a brothel or at a sex scene, I'm yelling at the screen saying, "We don't have time for this."
Right. It's just time to move on. We need story. We don't need oogling. We don't need filler. We don't need, you know, any of that stuff.
Winter's coming. The Night King is coming. Here. Well, winter's here, but for the past 6 years, winter's been coming. Right. There's dragons across the narrow sea, and we don't have time for this.
Right. And seriously. I mean, that's the thing. So, like, now this whole season that's been giving us everything that, for me, this is like everything that I've been wanting to see. Like, everything is finally coming to fruition.
All right, let's hit the list. Arya Stark finally makes it home. How stoked are you about this?
I am super stoked about this because the fact that she has been kind of like the missing link as far as like the family goes. Like, everybody else has kind of been holding their own. They've had like a heavy story. She's had a story here and there when she was training with what was it, the man with no name, or the man that has no name, you know, she's training with him. But I mean,
Clint
as far as her
Clint
coming,
but, yeah. The man with no name.
Whatever the guys, I told you I'm bad. It's one of the things I need to work on is the,
well, she
is the
originally
name
she originally trained at King's Landing with Silvio. He was a water dancer. Then I think the Hound gave her some tips and tricks while he was her kind of prisoner or whatever. She traveled along with the men with, not men without hats, the men without borders, the Brotherhood without borders.
Right.
Oh, and the faceless men. Yes.
Right. So the faceless men, that's the guy that I was talking about.
A girl
so
has
just
no
the
name.
Idea of her kind of coming back in, like her story has always been self-contained. It hasn't been part of a grander scheme other than the fact of her coming in and trying to murder, you know, get retribution for the death of her family.
Well, it's been frustrating for me because it's like, and this was true in the books too, every time Arya came close to getting home, like Arya made it to the twins for Rob's wedding. She was there pretty much like in the parking lot, but then shit went down and I forget who grabbed her away. I think it was the Hound, like, oh, come on, we got to get out of here. Your brother's dead. Right. Your mother's dead. And then he takes her all the way to Rivervale to go visit her aunt. And, oh, by the way, they're all dead now, too. So, okay, we're going to turn around. There's nothing for you here. It seems like Arya was always late to the party, and I kind of had this nagging frustration that, she's never going to make it home. And tonight, finally, she's home.
Yeah, it's the piece that's kind of been missing from the puzzle. I mean, you have Bran Stark. You have Sansa Stark, and then now you have Arya Stark, all at
Winterfell.
What's the name? Winterfell.
And then you know what happens
when they're all back there. And I mean, her just trying to get in was just—it's like, you know, she's going to get in, and then she kind of drops the threat. She's like, you know, you don't want to not let me in and then find out who I am. And then
that was the writers giving us one last push of frustration, like she's going to get turned away at the door. I'm like, no, this has happened enough.
Right.
But you
there's
know,
no way that's not going to happen tonight.
Now that all the Starks are back at Winterfell, you know what mm-hmm. happens when Jon Snow gets home? And I'll form the head.
We're going to get Starktron. I'm in the right mind place because I just finished season two of Voltron, so I'm on board with that.
I'm behind. But he's going to form Blazing Longclaw. They're gonna unite into this giant robot.
But so let's see. But here's the thing. Okay, so with tonight's episode, since we're kind of jumping in topic here, as far as the episode goes, so Bran Stark is there, but now basically he's become the Three-Eyed Raven.
I think
he's no longer. I mean, he even nods to it. He's no longer Bran Stark.
Well, you know what's weird? I'm glad you mentioned that because Bran is a shell of who he was. He's physically mm-hmm. there, but he's not their really brother anymore. Arya is back, but as Sansa notes when she watches her sister fighting, she's kind of not back either. Like, she's changed. She's got this list, mm-hmm. and I feel I feel she's a little psychotic. I'm not entirely, you know, she reminds me of Lizzie on The Walking Dead. Like, there's a couple, she's a little dangerous in the wrong hands.
Yeah, she's definitely a loose cannon, and that's the thing. It's like, so this kind of jumping forward in the episode, when she is with, what is the knight? I told you, I'm really bad with names.
Captain Phasma from Force Awakens.
Right, Captain Phasma. I was like, Gwendolyn, yeah.
Gwendolyn Moore.
Okay, so her character, so when she gets out and she's training with her, and she pulls out Needle, and then she has the Valyrian dagger, and she's like, I want to train with you. You see, so Sansa's watching this happen, and you can see the look of concern on her face. I'm trying to figure out what the look of concern, like, it doesn't match the scene.
Well, my take on that is that she's happy to have her sister back, but mm-hmm. who is this woman? I don't know this person down there who was skilled and adept and dangerous. And she walks away kind of maybe longing for that little sister that she used to yell at, but look who remains. Littlefinger, kind of twisting his mustache like, I can use
that
her.
But that dude is also, I mean, every time he's on screen, I'm like, what is he going to do to manipulate what's going on? At any point, he can pull the rug out from under anything that's going on because he's got things working.
He is the cancer. He's the cancer of Winterfell because he's the reason Ned Stark got killed, and I'm still mad at him about that.
God, he is just he's one of the few characters. I mean, he doesn't rank up there with Joffrey because Joffrey was, I mean, let's just agree, Joffrey was pretty much the worst.
You love to hate him.
Yeah. I loved hating him. All right. But that was the thing, is like, he was that character that every time he came on screen, you're like, motherfucker, you know. But
it's kinda
when
like,
he bit
it's
it,
like
you're kind of like, oh, he's gone.
It's kind of like public events today. Like, you wake up and you're like, oh, what's he gonna say? Or what's he gonna do today? But you're right, Littlefinger. He's a true politician. He's mm-hmm. you can't trust him. Whereas, remember when the show first started, you had Littlefinger and you had Varys, and both of them played the game. But now Varys, I feel, made a choice, and he's on the right side, doing things for the right reasons, greater, loftier goals, whereas Littlefinger is still looking out for himself.
Absolutely. Well, he's always going to be looking out for himself, regardless. Even though that he keeps referring to Lady Stark as like the reason that he's there and that he's doing everything and that he would have given his life for her, I don't think he would have given his life for her. I think when it came down to it, he would have chose himself.
Always.
And that's it. And he's never, I don't think he has any unconditional love for anybody. As much as he wants to state it, I think he uses that basically as his queen.
Well,
basically, literally.
Now that Arya is back, you noticed in the last episode, he tried to talk to Jon Snow, and Jon wasn't mm-hmm. having it. Now he's talking to Sansa, and she's realizing mm-hmm. who he is, what he's about, and he knows she's not having it. So now that there's a new Stark, Arya, who's a little bit of a little psycho, I think he's going to try to now, not seduce her, but kind of try to use her for his agenda.
I agree with that, but also the look on his face, because I was trying to judge, since there were no words, I was trying to judge kind of what was going on in his head as a character on the screen. And it was a look of, okay, I'm kind of gathering what's going on here, but also a slight look of concern, because her being a loose cannon, she could easily turn on him.
True.
And take him out of the equation.
She might be the death of him.
He needs to figure it out. Right, he needs to figure out how to kind of wrangle her in, I guess, and use him to her advantage, or use her to his advantage.
So, I mean, the King of the North is back. House Stark is reforming. There's a power in the North again. Starks are regaining their strength. I mean, it's been six seasons, and finally House Stark is coming back. All we need now is Jon to come back and Bran to tell him who his father is.
Right, and I mean, that's the thing. So now, what does it come down to? He is basically...
he's half Targaryen.
He's a Targaryen, yeah. So he's that's made me wonder, it's like when it comes down to it, since he is with Daenerys and he's near the dragons, does he have any connection to the dragons?
He will be able to ride a dragon, I'm calling it. He will be able to ride a dragon.
That's where I'm at with that.
I feel like, and again... a lot of people say, ooh, you know, maybe the two of them will get together, Daenerys and Jon Snow. And it's like, whoa. Daenerys is his aunt.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's brother. Genetic. Okay, but let's throw that out the window.
Royalty does that.
With Jaime and...
True. But yeah. I'm and another thing I'm calling, Jon Snow is not going to make it out alive. He came back from the dead. Mm-hmm. He was resurrected. His goal, his destiny, his purpose... is to sacrifice himself on the battlefield for some greater, like, he's going to take out the Night King. Whatever he does is going to be a big sacrifice for everyone. So he won't get to live happily ever after with whomever.
And that kind of leads into kind of where the story goes in the episode. So, I mean, you have Daenerys, you have Jon Snow on the island. He's wanting to mine the dragon glass. Mm-hmm. He kind of pulls her into the fold and he takes her into the cave where the dragon glass is going to be mined. So it's like you start to see this building of a thing. So he takes her in there and they look at kind of the writings of these people that were before this whole kingdom was made and everything was separated.
Jon Snow's a good artist. He drew all that really quickly.
That's what I was thinking. I thought she was going to look at him. And when we kind of get into that, I thought she was going to look at him and go, you were in here and you already drew this. I thought that she was going to throw that down. I really did. But so he pulls her into the cave. He shows her the drawing, you know, the etchings on the wall and so forth. And then he shows her the etchings of the Night King?
Yeah, the Night King.
Yep. Okay, so he shows her the etchings of that. And she basically, it keeps going back and forth to this thing. It's like the bending of the knee. It's kind of really starting to annoy me, the whole, are you going to bend your knee? And it's like, show your allegiance to me. It's like, why can't they just kind of... She's so hell-bent on being top dog that she can't let them just kind of be a working together.
Yeah, like, you don't need to bend the team, but we are allies and together we're going to do this. And last season, they even said, well, you know, be it House Stark or Lannister or Targaryen, the house is, it's always going to be that wheel, this Game of Thrones. Well, I'm going to break the wheel, which means no more of this.
Right.
And
she wants to be supreme leader.
She's not following that example of, all right, there doesn't need to be people subservient to me because I'm going to bring order. And this new order doesn't necessarily have to mean those seven kingdoms.
She has a little bit of a little Palpatine in her when it comes to something like that. You know, she wants to rule them, you know, or Sauron. She wants to be the one ruler of them all.
Although I will, and this is not a weird sexual relationship thing, but I feel like, all right, obvious strong female character. She's saying, bend the knee, bend the wee, Johns, bend the knee, bend the wee.
Sorry, hey, bend the wee.
Yeah, I'm bending. It's not going in straight.
Anyway,
Jon Snow keeps saying, no, I can't do it.
Right?
Maybe he, you know, there's that tug of war, push and pull. Like someone has to be the alpha. Even in a partnership. So
that's where I was going with that. It's like when it comes down to it. So before they leave the cave, I thought that she was going to finally break him. And she's like,
I
will fight. She's like, I will fight for you. And maybe that happened in the cave.
I think
it did. We just didn't see it. Maybe he does finally bend the knee to her.
That was the impression
I got. I will fight for you when you bend the knee.
Honestly, that was the impression I got. And when they got to the exit of the cave and Varys and, mm-hmm. and the Dinkles are standing out there.
Right.
Like that, yeah. There was almost like, okay, we don't have time to talk about that now because, all right, what's the news from the front?
Right. Well, it's like, yeah, that it's like they were going to come back to it. And I mean, it was very much felt to me that that's what happened, but it was untelevised.
And can we talk a minute? And I only want to waste a minute on this guy. Can we talk a minute about how Dickless Greyjoy is just a waste of film? Like,
oh my god!
Like, why is he even still here?
Why is he here? Why is he here? I mean, it's like the fact that okay, so he abandoned his sister when which Greyjoy was it? The cousin that came in?
Euron
Greyjoy. He came. Oh man, he came and just wiped him out.
Uncle Euron.
So she gets taken. Yeah, she gets taken. And then he just dives overboard. Well, he gets captured. And then suddenly, one of the things I wrote on Twitter was like, that was an unexpected reunion. I wasn't expecting that. I really wasn't, because I saw that and I was like, well, I wasn't really expecting. I mean, it was really kind of uneventful, but at the same time, I was kind of like, there's a little bit of tension that they just created that kind of wasn't expected to be in there.
Two things. Like, when I first saw it, I figured, okay, Euron just thought, okay, you're...
Right.
Spineless, your weasel. I'm just gonna let you go. But maybe he is like Will Scarlet in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. It's
right,
like, okay,
right.
The sheriff has him. I'm gonna let you go because he says I'm gonna go get Jon Snow for you. And meanwhile, he's gonna do the good thing. He's gonna do the right thing. Other than that, he's a waste of space.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. It's like I feel like he's just a leftover character that they haven't quite figured out what to do with. And yes. They're just kind of buying him time until they can flesh out his story.
He has a lot to atone for.
Flesh out his story. God, that's bad.
Oh, dick jokes.
Yep. Yeah, dick joke.
Hashtag
joke,
total actually. Dick bird.
Right. That's classic
that's,
dick bird.
That's
right
classic
there.
Dick bird.
But so he shows up, and basically he wants to talk to Daenerys, and at that point we find out, because, well, let's go back just a second. When she comes out of the cave, and she looks at John and she's trying to figure out what to do because now she found out that she lost what was the castle? What was the lady that
the Highgarden was taken.
Right, that was taken.
So
really got to get better with this name thing.
The Tyrells.
Horrible.
The Tyrells are the rich people next to the Lannisters.
Right, so she lost them because Jaime, you know, he took that castle
and all the gold.
He wiped them out and he took all the gold. That's how the whole episode starts. The whole thing is about them getting gold to pay back the Iron Bank.
Dude, now nobody has gold.
They need the money.
The gold
right,
is in a
no
puddle
money.
Out in the field. There's a puddle of gold out in the field.
All right. Yeah, let's get to that. Okay. We'll get to that here. Just like, yeah, that's how that hat rolled out. So basically, he shows up and... actually, before that, what I was talking about. Hold on. All right.
On the beach.
On the beach, she looks at John and she's asking him what she should do. And John basically tells her that your people believe in you and they think, you know, that they think that you have more in you than just going out and just wiping out an entire civilization with your three dragons.
He's right.
You should do something else. You should give them something more because you can do something more.
Well, that was
so
good.
Then you can,
like that
yeah.
was that was actually some Ned Stark knowledge, like wisdom. That was you do know something, Jon Snow. I was impressed with that.
Yeah, and he kind of throws down the gauntlet for her to think outside the box. So I wasn't quite sure what her next move was going to be. So
I didn't see what happened coming. I was completely
right.
Like, what?
Right. So we get back to Greyjoy coming up on the beach, and he's like, "I'd like to speak to Daenerys." In essence, and they're like, "She's not here." Immediately. You're like,
where'd she go?
What'd she go do? What did she go and do? Because you know she's gone. She's on a dragon. You already know.
Yes. I assume she was on the dragon. And, I mean, that party on the beach before Greyjoy got there, that's kind of the dream team. I mean, we got the Dinkles, Jon Snow, Daenerys, Varys, who is now definitely an asset.
Right.
We got the Onion Knight, who's always been loyal to whoever he serves. He's definitely an asset. And it's like, all
right,
this is the winning team. This is who... we're rooting for now. All we got to do is get, you know, Mr. formerly Grayscale and get Samwell back into the fold and get up to Winterfell. And let's, it would be amazing. Yeah. It'd be the 86 Mets.
Because it's put... I don't know sports that well, but I kind of get the reference enough to know what you're talking about.
It was the last time I cared about the Mets.
Boy, that's been, almost 30 years ago. Hey. Over 30 years ago.
Yep.
So now we lead into basically the oh my fucking God moment. So you have Jamie. What is the gentleman who
Bronn.
Was with?
Bronn of, okay. of the Blackwater.
Right, there you go. They're talking, and he's like, hold on a second.
And I like Bronn, too.
That?
Bronn has always been...
Right.
He's on the other side of the line. He's like a Han Solo who's on the other side of the line to be scummy, not charming.
Correct.
But you still like him.
Right. Yeah, he is. He's definitely... And he's got the personality. You're like, I kind of want to see this guy survive, only because he's really concerned with just himself, but... Possibly he's concerned with a little bit more.
But he's always
been... But you never quite know.
He's had just enough good in him where he always helped out Tyrion. He never betrayed him. He was always likable enough to go, you know, I don't have to watch my back around you, but if you get a better offer, you'll leave. You won't kill me, but you'll leave.
That's very much... That was very much Han Solo in the early days.
Yeah.
Being taken whoever the highest bidder was. But so that happens, and then you hear the Dothraki army. You hear them, the warriors on the, and you start to see them come over the horizon on the mountainside.
Man, I would love. My mind is in a tangent right now. I'm with you, but my mind is tangenting off to a scene somehow where Bronn somehow, some way would be in front of Daenerys, and he's like, look, Your Highness, I'm not in it for you. I'm not in it for your rebellion. I'm in it for the money. I expect to be well paid.
Yep, and then whatever, she just offered, you know, and then if she would...
If money is all you love, then money is what you shall receive.
Right, and then...
Dracarys.
As long as she has her hair up in buns on the side, I'm assuming.
The Danishes.
Right.
But back to our scheduled stampede.
Right.
Take it away.
So you see them coming in, and then you see the goddamn dragon.
Oh, dude. Hearing the rumble of those... and again, because we're past the books, for five seasons, I knew everything that was going to happen. Now, I'm sitting there on my couch going... Oh my God, who's coming? Well, the dragon's not going to make that noise. Why is there rumbling? Oh my God.
Yeah, and then they come up over the hill, and you see them, and then they start in action. I mean, it's just a slaughter. They don't stop. They're relentless. They don't stop. And they come in, and then they take control.
Oof. The Dothraki,
of the battle.
The Dothraki definitely have proven to be adept warriors, and this is very much the way you saw it in the American Revolutionary War. You had the stiff soldiers standing there in lines, and you have these untrained militia just barreling through them.
Yeah, because they did not know what to do. They weren't prepared for this type of battle, and they weren't prepared for this type of opponent. But then... when you throw a dragon into the mix,
God.
And the fact that Daenerys is riding on the back of the dragon, and she just comes in and just flames and fire everywhere. It was just magnificent. It was so great.
This is something that harkens back to D&D and Dungeons and Dragons. Dragons emanate what's called dragon fear. And anytime they're around a battlefield, anytime they're somewhere, characters on the ground have to make a saving throw against it to continue acting, otherwise they're frozen in fear, just in awe of this dragon. And I'm sitting there on my couch in awe of this dragon, like, oh my God, Jamie, get out of there. Oh my God, Jamie, get out of there.
One of the best dragons on screen, like digitally produced, that I've seen. And I mean, you know, what was the movie? It was a Ring of Fire. Rain of Fire. That had a really good dragon in it.
It did, but you also didn't see it too well.
Right. It was the same way because they were trying to hide it. Same way with the movie, what was it, Dragon Slayer in the 80s?
Yo, yeah.
And that was a practical dragon that they used in them. I mean, they didn't have CG then. But, I mean, they hit it with darkness. But this, you have this huge dragon just coming out of the sky, basically breaks the line with the flame, carbonizing
Oh my God.
So hot. Carbonizing the warriors. I mean, it just turned them to ash. There was no burning.
There was no roasting. It was just ash. The one soldier you saw who was still together, and then the wind dissipated his ashes into nothing. Yeah.
It was just so cool. And then the fact that, okay, so you had the Dothraki army coming in. They're on the horseback, and then they start pulling maneuvers, like they jump off the side of the horse.
Yes.
They pull the bows and arrows. They start launching them into the front line. I mean, you're just seeing maneuvers that is like, holy shit, this is awesome stuff.
It's non-traditional warfare that these, you know, Eastern armies aren't used to.
Right.
And that's luckily, you know, you have some people out there who are a bit flexible. Even with one hand, Jamie seems to have his head about him. And I forget which family he's in, but Rickon, who the guy keeps calling. No, it's Dickon. Dickon, right. His name is.
Yeah.
His name is
Dickon.
Because
he said, yeah, he did Dickon. And he just looks at him and he's like, really?
He seems competent too. Like when he saves Jamie and it's like, whoa, all right, we have a decent fighter here.
Right. But I mean, that's the thing. It's like they kind of have their wits about him for like a moment. But as Daenerys keeps making loops, she keeps wiping out. She keeps coming along, basically the trail, and wiping out all the wagons with
line
all of the gear and
after
everything on
line
it.
And
after then
line.
You have the guys. They line. They you have basically the line that comes in, and they have the archers. And they start shooting arrows at her, and I'm like, okay, this is nothing. But you know that they know, and kind of hearkening back to Tolkien with the Hobbit story, the Black Arrow that was able to take down Smaug.
See, I didn't think they had that. I wasn't unaware. I thought that was still I thought that was still at King's Landing.
Right,
and
that's
when
what I thought too.
Bronn opens it up. I said, yeah. Oh no!
Right, and I was worried. I was truly worried.
After you know, everyone's getting burned to a crisp. I was worried for Bronn. I thought Bronn was going to bite it.
Right.
Then when he found the arrow, I'm like, oh no, Daenerys is only going to have two dragons.
He Optimus Prime that fucking trailer and he pulls out the gun.
He totally did. One shall stand,
like,
one shall fall.
He's like, Autobots, roll out.
Why throw away your life so recklessly, Sir Bronn? That's a question
that
you'll have
thing.
To
it's
ask
like,
yourself.
But it was so good when he opens it up, and I don't want to see the dragons go anywhere because
please,
I've been waiting seven
please.
Seasons for
someone...
these dragons to be in full battle roasting
dude,
people like they are now.
Someone has to take that scene and like do a mod of it and put it on YouTube where like when the hatch opens, it makes that transformer noise. That dude, that is Optimus Prime's trailer with that little foldy thing in the back.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man. The little bot that comes up.
Roller.
Yeah. I could not remember what it was, but I did. I had the trailer. God, I love that thing. But,
please.
Transform and roll out.
That'd be awesome.
But that's the thing. So he gets on the back of there, and he loads up the arrow. And, I mean, it's very much a nod. I feel that, you know, with R.R. Martin to... R.R. Tolkien, in writing that with the Black Arrow, is very much the same kind of same weapon, same way to take
it
down
is.
The dragon, same thing. And you have him, and he pulls it back, and he puts it into the crossbow, and he just starts. He's trying to take aim, and you're like, part of you wants to see him take it down and survive,
yeah,
a little bit, and then the other part, actually, like the 90% part of me is like, oh. No, I want you to roast. You're not. I don't want you to die, but I want this thing to be destroyed.
This is what's great.
I don't want Cersei to have access to this weapon anymore.
This is what's great because we have people on both sides that we're rooting for. Like, I want Jaime and Bronn to survive. I want Daenerys' army to win. I want the dragon to mop up, but I don't want him to kill anyone I care about.
Right. It's like, but that's kind of how the whole episode, the whole series is going. It's like, you don't want the people to die that you like, but everybody fucking dies. Everybody knows that. As soon as you start to like somebody,
everybody
count
dies.
Them out. But that's the thing. I'm surprised that, like, Tyrion just grew on me over time. Like, he was kind of the guy, again, you just love to hate.
No,
but
I always liked Tyrion.
I
always
liked him
because,
liked
like Jon Snow,
same time,
he was the outsider, and he was always true about who he was.
Yeah, he very much was,
and
I'm,
he was
I'm
always
100%
good
on board.
No matter what he did when he was the hand, you know, when he was the king's hand at King's Landing, he did his best for the people. He always looked after Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he was with, you know, on the across the ocean, he was always helpful to whomever he was with. Like, he's always been good.
Right. And I mean, I'm on board, but at the same time, it's like there were some times you would see him and it's kind of like you're kind of like a despicable character, but at the same time, you're very likable. You're like kind of the glue that's holding what's happening together, and you're giving us hope for what's going to come out of it.
I mean, at the same time, because of the books, I also had much of his backstory. Like in the books, mm-hmm. when you there are entire chapters, pretty much there's an entire book that has chapters dedicated to Jaime's backstory, what happened, why he's the Kingslayer, all the things that make him who he is. And once I read that, like when you're first introduced to the character in season one, he's the nemesis of Ned Stark, so you hate him. But when you mm-hmm. find out what he's about and who he is, you start to like him. And especially in his travels with that Lady Knight, whose name we can't
right.
remember.
That's right. So her name is, her actor name is Gwendolyn Stacy, Moore. But I cannot remember her freaking character.
It's because it's very similar IMDb. To someone else's name. But
let's see.
He's a flawed human being, but again, he's a
Gwendolyn
man
Christie.
Who's trying to do the best he can. He's trying to make choices to protect his family.
Brienne of Tarth. Oh my God.
Brienne of Tarth, right.
Yes. Good God.
Oh,
so
and it's because
we're not recalling that.
Because Brienne of Tarth sounds like Samwell Tarly, who is the fat guy in Old Town.
Okay, you've lost me. Oh, yep, nope, I got you. Yep. I got you.
Yep,
he's
yep,
the
yep.
guy that doesn't. He's now at the. He's the maester.
He's trying to become a maester.
Right, he's trying to become a maester. But he did save. What's his name of the grayscale? Why can't I remember the name of what he has?
I forget his name too, and he's an awesome character.
This is again another episode.
Sir that guy.
Sir, that guy, yeah. Jesus, I feel horrible. But anyway, yeah, so I mean, wherever that was going, yeah, I've lost track.
But that's
now.
The thing. All this backstory makes everything richer, and I feel mm-hmm. like while the books aren't necessary, like you don't have to read the books to get the story, it definitely fleshes things out and gives you greater appreciation for everything that's happening because there's so much that the show just can't get into. I mean, we only get 10 episodes a season. Normally, we're getting less this season, and there's so much to convey, and HBO spends an eighth of it in a brothel with naked women, and there's no time
Mormont.
For this.
Mormont.
Jorah Mormont. Yes.
Yep. There you go. Good. See, you pulled the first name, so good job.
Jorah Mormont, who is the son of Lord Commander Mormont up at the Wall, who was Samwell Tarly's commanding officer.
You win this round of Game of Thrones Trivial Pursuit.
I win. I win.
So I win something. I feel amazing.
I sit on the tiny plastic iron throne that comes with the game. Ow, that hurts.
So where were we at?
In a burning field with dragon fire and ash shoulders.
So he's she comes in. Daenerys comes in on. Oh, is it Dragorn? Is that the dragon that she's on?
Drogon.
Drogon.
He's the biggest and meanest.
Right. So she comes in on Drogon. So she's coming down. She's coming in over the water, which was fantastic. When the wind is causing the ripple effect over the water, and she comes in and she's coming straight in towards the army and towards Jaime, wings open. And fire blowing, and she just wipes out the army. But then he's taking aim on the dragon with the black basically their black arrow, and she's coming around, and then he fires the arrow, and it hits the second time.
Yes,
the first time it flies past, and you're like, okay, good.
I was worried. I was like, oh, that was close.
Right, because Tyrion's watching. He's up on the side of the field with the Dothraki.
And it should have taken him longer to reload, I felt.
I do, too. He reloaded that thing quite swiftly and got it aimed quite quickly. But here's the thing. It's like, okay, so she has absolute maneuverability on this dragon. Why not come in from around the back
or from around
the side?
This is what I was wondering, because I'm watching her, and of course, she's controlling the dragon, but I feel like you never see her issuing commands. She's not in the saddle. She's literally just like hanging on to his back.
Right.
I'm a big fan of Dragonlance series. It's an offshoot of D&D.
And I've heard of that.
The Dragon Lords all had ceremonial armor, and they had saddles, mm-hmm. and they were, you know, they had relationships with their dragons where they were kind of paired with them. I imagine we'll eventually see them on dragon saddles, and of course mm-hmm. she's got three dragons. She needs riders for the other two, and hey, the dragons are named after her brothers. Her brother, who happens to be Jon right. Snow's father, I guarantee Jon Snow is going to get to ride that dragon.
That would be... I'm going to lose my shit.
The namesake of his father.
Because I'm telling you right now, it's like, I don't know much about the book stuff, but I've just had a hunch. I think we talked about this when we were together. It was just the fact that I had a hunch that there's going... Yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to be able to communicate or do something with the dragons. And yes, if I'm on board with your prediction of the riding of the dragon, because that's going to be...
Now, Drogon clearly awesome. Didn't see Dragonheart, because right. when the big arrow is launched at him, he's supposed to grab it and go, "Oh, you got right. me, Bowen."
But he's got to speak like Sean Connery when he goes down. He's like, "Oh no,
I am the last one."
And suddenly, he sounds like Bane for some reason.
He's like, "Bowen,
I'm going down."
Well, that's all part of my plan. The Seven Kingdoms is irrelevant.
I can't keep going off on this tangent. This is going to get worse. But so basically, I mean, it's just awesome. Just the effects that they use when she comes in, and the immense size and weight that they give this dragon.
Oh.
It doesn't look like it's out of place. It
no.
very much looks like it's in the world. And I mean, you see the environment affecting it. It comes down and it lines up, and that's when it carbonizes that.
Well, it also,
you see that soldier blowback.
You also see him take out like a whole carriage with his tail, and it's like
mm-hmm.
you. And this is the thing: when I saw it, we're used to dragons being cinematically used sparingly. Now we have
right.
a dragon in the thick of it. You assume that if he's not in the air, he's vulnerable. But he lands.
Right.
He's got a huge arrow in him, and he's still
mm-hmm.
mobile. He's hurt, but he's still dangerous. He's still
oh, yeah.
a major piece on the board.
He is not fucking around, as we like to say.
And but... and Jaime, he's like, okay, I can leave, or I can go after.
Yep.
I see the queen and her dragon. I can be a hero and end this right now. And Tyrion's like, no, don't be a fucking idiot.
Right, right, right. And that's the thing. So when she comes in and he's got the arrow in the shoulder, and he does come down. I mean, you just see the amount of, like I said, the amount of weight and force that he puts down, and boom, he gains control, and you're like, oh, God, the dragon's down, but the dragon isn't down. The dragon took a non-lethal blow, and you rarely see, like, normally when a dragon would take an arrow like that, I was like, all right, that's the end of the dragon. But
well,
like
if
you
it
said,
was, if it was a couple of feet over, it would have been a
right.
different story, but it hit him in the shoulder.
Yeah, it hit him in the shoulder, and he recovers, and he pulls back, and like, you guys are done. Sorry, he's getting ready to destroy all of you, and that's exactly what he does, and it just wipes it out. And then, like you said, you see Jaime take. He sees the opportunity. She's trying to get the arrow out of the wing, and then this is where it really annoys me. So the dragon turns and just goes to incinerate Jaime, but he is knocked into the water underneath the flames that just ripple across the top of the water.
Well, it's definitely going to be hot. I mean, as we've seen in any Hollywood movie where there's an explosion and the heroes land in the water,
mm-hmm.
that's what saves them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know he's not going to die. But that's the thing, is like, so as the I felt like the episode was cut short.
Well, it was only 52
because,
minutes.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I felt it was very. And that is one of the things that I did right. It was like, you know, I waited 7 years to see this. I finally am getting to see what I've had in my head on screen. And you cut it. I just felt like they cut the episode short.
Well, you know
I
what
felt
it
like
is?
They, it just abruptly ended.
It was, I think, in hindsight, that's the best way to do it, because we've been wanting this. We're on this
mm-hmm.
huge high. This was an unexpected battle. Usually it's like the second to last episode of the season and there's a big
right.
battle. We got one now dropped in the middle of the season we weren't expecting, and it wasn't planned out. Daenerys is just like, I'm going to go burn some motherfuckers. And she
right.
goes, I feel like burning some people today. And she goes
yeah.
out, she does this. We as viewers, both of us have been waiting for this for 7 years.
Yeah.
imagine they showed the aftermath of the battle, it would be anticlimactic, because right now, what is the fate of Jaime? Is he going to make it? What's going to happen to Daenerys and the dragon? What, like, there's so much at stake. There's a valuable piece out on the board. Like, most of the army is spread out, but she's vulnerable.
Right.
What's going to happen? Is Bronn going to make it? Because Bronn knocked him off the horse.
Right. He's the one that actually saves him from getting roasted by Dragorn.
And this, again, it's a Han Solo move. He could have run and saved himself, but he comes back going, "Yahoo! Let's slay this queen and get the hell out and go home."
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the thing. So, I mean, he pushes him in the water, and then that's the last we see of it. But here's the thing that I immediately am sitting there thinking, okay, he's got an iron hand or a brass hand.
And armor is heavy.
He's going to have to lose all of that in order to be able to pull himself out of this, this predicament.
Well, this made me immediately brought me back to John Borman's Excalibur from the 80s.
Okay.
Where Percival gets attacked by all these townspeople. He gets knocked into the water and he's drowning, but he sheds his armor and he comes out. And that's what gives him the vision to see the Holy Grail and to get the Holy Grail to bring it back to Arthur to revitalize the king.
Good call, because it's been a long time since I've seen that movie. I just remember the Lady in the Lake, the hand coming up out of the water with Excalibur.
And again, I don't know if there's a path of redemption for Jaime, but I feel like this might be it. If he comes out of the water, he doesn't necessarily need to surrender, and I don't see him voluntarily leaving Cersei's side because there's that dysfunctional relationship between them. But his brother, who he now knows didn't kill his son, is on the other side.
Good call. I forgot all about that.
There's this figure, this mythical queen that comes back from the age with the three dragons that was foretold back in the day. And Jaime's a good man. For all his faults, he's a good man.
I think so. I'm with you, because he has honor. He does have a degree of honor to him.
Yes. This might be his vision of the Holy Grail to...
Because here's the other thing, and it's been mentioned in two episodes now to him about how crazy and untrustworthy Cersei is. And that she is basically going to take everything down with
her. And Euron Greyjoy is going to kind of be her new kind of right-hand, a possible marriage... partner potential.
Oh yeah,
and replacement Jaime. So I think Jaime, even if he doesn't switch sides, this might make him bow out and say, "I'm not going to help you anymore, Cersei, but I won't fight you, Jon Snow, and Daenerys. You're not my enemies."
I agree, and that is a very good point that you made. I was not that had not registered in my head.
So which will win, the dying? Distorted love for his sister or his love for his brother? Which will win?
That is a...
And the children are dead, so it's not like,
he has no real ties to
those
them.
Those ties
anymore.
Are gone.
Right. All of that was there. And I think he's finally... I think because once you start seeing a point made to a character about another character multiple times so close together, I think it's more of a forward to the fact that he's going to realize that for himself.
Right.
Individual is going to. I hope. I'm with you. I hope so.
Because I want to see Jaime make it out of this.
Mm-hmm. I do. I like
the whole series, not just the the Dragonfire.
I would like to see him join back up with Brienne of Tarth. I would like to see that kind of reunion moment.
And she's at Winterfell, so she's with our hero. She's with the good guys. She's on the team of she's on the dream team.
So they could take him as prisoner?
I don't think they'll take him as prisoner, but it might just be a
relinquishing of sides.
Like, Cersei doesn't know I'm here, but here's the plans, here's the stuff. I won't be part of attacking my other people, but hey, here's some information.
And this calls back to what you said earlier about all the money being, and all the gold being in puddles, because it's all melted by the dragon.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. So now the Iron Bank doesn't have its repayment. Because in the beginning of the episode, the guy that was the representative from the bank, he's like, "We are on your side. As soon as we see that gold, once we see that gold, we're all in.
We's about to get paid.
But until then, nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he made that very clear that she has no support without the money.
She's got no money, mo problems.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's the thing is, like, I'm curious where next week's episode's going to go. And I wish I could remember what the trailer for next week showed.
Well, the trailer for next week is it doesn't give you too many answers for the stuff we want to see, like Jamie. Mm-hmm. I could cue it up. The trailer for next week, you see kind of a dragon on a hill, which I guess is Drogon
Hold on. Let's see if I can get it up here real quick.
So just kind of... for the people listening, you see Daenerys talking to, I guess, what is the remnants of the Lannister army, and she's pretty much saying, all right, I have no beef with you guys. If you switch sides, if you follow me, we're good. If not, you're going to die. You're going to die.
Yeah, so basically she kind of calls the call to show. All right, here it is.
And you see there's
that
a moment.
Oh, wow. Impressive.
There's a moment where I'm not sure which dragon, but is facing off with Jon Snow. And I think this is we're going to see the beginnings of that bond.
Oh, yeah. Yep, there it is. Okay, yeah, cuz I mean you're seeing just a lot of basically, it's a lot of flashes.
Yeah.
But you see that Jon Snow has returned. Not returned. No, he's up in their
he's in Dragonstone
room.
Still.
Yeah, he's in their command room where they have the
map. Mm-hmm.
They have the table with the
all the army
the map and everything on it. So I mean, is he now in the fold with them and trying to help them call some of the shots of they need to do?
Like
to
you said, like we guessed, he may have bent the knee.
Right.
And if he's
and I'm wondering if they're gonna cover that. I hope they cover that in the next. I mean, it's gonna have to be covered before the end of the season. I would hope.
Absolutely. And then you see,
but that's the thing.
You see,
you
Bran,
talk about
Bran is working out. His eyes are milked over, and there's this murder of crows flying over the army of the dead, and they're coming.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, because you talked about, okay, so we kind of got what we wanted, like an end of season battle in the middle of the season. But this is just a. Basically, in where we're at with the final two seasons being as short as they are, this is a mid-season battle. This is the scale of a mid-season battle.
Oh, yeah.
We are getting ready to have now. We still have to deal with them facing off with the Army of the Dead,
uh-huh.
And we still have to do with the larger battle of the armies from King's Landing and all of her army. This is going to get larger.
This is a skirmish. Like we are. This is kind of like, remember Deep Space Nine and the Dominion War. And I remember there was in one of the episodes, and the Defiant is fighting the Dominion, and they're having a hard time. And then all of a sudden, they're joined by the Cardassians, who were former enemies. Like, oh my God, the Cardassians!
Not
are
the
with
Cardassians.
Us. Not the Cardassians, but the Cardassians.
Yeah, not the Cardassians. There's
they
no
were with them.
Involved.
And then, and ironically, the episode was called "Once More Unto the Breach." I remember this very distinctly. And at the darkest hour, in the middle of the battle. All of a sudden, these ships warp in, and it's the Klingons coming to save them. It's like, what? It's like, Captain, the Klingons are here. What? That's going to happen in Game of Thrones. There's going to be this big battle. All the parties are going to be in. You're going to have to choose a side. And, oh, hey, here's the dead coming. Come on, guys, let's saddle up and take care of it.
Because now that is the biggest threat to the entire civilization is... the Night King. And I mean, we have gotten so little of him.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, so now we've gotten the dragons that we've been wanting to see, but now I want more of the story of the Night King. These are like, I want more of the fantasy stories. We've gotten all the medieval type stuff that we've gotten out of this. I want more back to this, more depth of the fantasy aspects of this world. And I'm really looking forward to where that's coming.
Because I don't remember too much of it, because remember there was a season that HBO forgot about Bran? They literally forgot about him, forgot to put him in the show.
Hmm.
And then the season after that, which was season 6, they had some catch-up story with Bran and the tree and the three-eyed raven and how...
Yeah, season 6 was heavy with his story. Season 5 was very... he came in at the very end, didn't he?
Yeah, and how the uncle, Jon Snow's uncle, Benjen Stark... He's undead himself, but somehow he's still has his faculties. He's still conscious. He's almost like the anti-Night King.
But then we still have other aspects that have been in this season. Who was it? Is it the are they other Targaryens? The ones that are with the Hound?
the Hound.
Oh, the one, okay, the guy.
No, the people who are with the Hound are the Brothers Without Borders, the Brotherhood Without Borders.
Okay.
That's
okay.
The Red Knight, the Red Priest.
Immediately, I just want to think Meals on Wheels.
Thoros of Myr, who is the Red Priest, yeah. who brought back Beric Dondarrion, who has been resurrected like 5 or 6 times.
Correct.
We don't know what they're about.
Bad with names. I know. I remember that part. It's like, how are they going to play into this?
They're
because they had the Hound. They had the Hound look into the fire, and I guess the God of Light bestowed upon him the visions of what was forthcoming, and he was able to suddenly see. So it's like, now what is he going to play into this? Again, we're more into the fantasy stuff. I want to know more about this stuff.
Well, we don't know anything about why there's the Night King, what that's about, why you know, it's come before.
He had a small section in it, like him coming into existence.
Yeah.
When you saw everything through the, what was the guy that, Max von Sydow, the guy that he was the guy that,
Ming the Merciless.
That played. Okay, yeah. When he played him and you saw these visions, God, I know the actor, you know the actual name inside the story.
No, dude, I said Ming the Merciless.
What character was that?
Well, Max von Sydow played Ming the Merciless in Flash Gordon.
Oh, God damn. I was like, Jesus Christ. Okay, I know Flash Gordon. Now I've got to have that song in my head for the evening. Thanks for that. Savior of the universe.
He's on Game of Thrones.
This is where everybody, if they hadn't already tuned out, they're tuning out now. But I mean, him coming in and you got to see some of the comings of the Night King. You got to see kind of how he came to
be. We got half a taste.
But it was very minimal.
It wasn't even an appetizer. It was like you're walking through the supermarket and we have a little chunk of chicken on a toothpick. That's what they gave us.
Oh, is that it?
Here, here's a
taste.
Tasted
good.
It's like, I want to know.
I want more. I want a lot more of that, please.
And like, all right, man, especially because now we have the dragon glass. We're going to have the means to fight them. But what is their motivation? Like, all right, it is scary to have this force out of legend, this bedtime story made real, this formerly unkillable, unstoppable creature that's coming after you. But this was always the problem I had with any zombie movie. Well, why? And how do they, you know, what is their the
what's
nature
their purpose,
of them?
Their motive?
What's the motive? What's the etymology? What's how are they created? How are they stopped? Why do they act the way they do? Et cetera, et cetera. And of course, that's where logic has to fall to fantasy and a direction of story. But still, we're 7 seasons in. We don't know why.
Right. It's like, we understand he's a big threat because he can create the army of the undead. But why is he creating this army? Why is he coming after them? Why? Why?
And he's been coming for 7 years now. He's fucking slow.
Right. Oh, winter's came. Yeah, winter's came, all right. Move out of its way.
And it seriously did. I mean, we've seen these guys walking south for 6 years now, and you'd think they would have at least gotten to the wall.
And now they have. I mean, you see that they keep picking up their bodies of whoever they've slain. They've got the giants with them now. You see that in the first couple episodes.
Yeah.
You see the body of the giants. You see the bodies of people that they've taken, you know, the wildlings and stuff like that they've now killed. It's like, but what's their end game? I understand that they want to take everything over, but again, like you say, why?
They're the Borg. Resistance is futile.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You will be assimilated into our collective.
But why? Oh well, I think that gets us to the end on this.
Next week is in the trailer. It says that I think Bran's vision sees them attacking Eastwatch by the sea, and that's the furthest east outpost of the wall. So it's almost like they're probably trying to go around the wall, because it's not like there's a wall in the water. They're dead. They don't need to breathe. Just walk into the water and then walk back out.
And then you start getting into Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl scenarios where they're walking through the water in the dead. Yeah, savvy, mate.
Savvy, mate. I haven't washed in 5 years. I smell wonderful.
But here's the thing. Do they now, even though they keep saying, everybody alludes to it, winter's coming, winter's. Do they bring the cold with them? Does winter actually literally follow them when they come? Is everything going to freeze over? Is it connected to them?
It seems like it's hand in hand. Like they almost couldn't come until winter arrived.
Right.
And yet they are the harbingers of winter.
Right. So it's just all death. Everything freezes over. So, I'm curious.
So you know what Westeros really needs? Westeros needs some good old-fashioned global warming, and
right.
that winter thing will be out of here.
Where do you guys figure out carbon emissions? It's going to be amazing.
So I think with that, I think we've done a good job of talking about Game of Thrones episode, The Spoils of War. Mm. Man, we could go on talking about this for
yeah.
a lot longer, but we're going to have next week where I think we should come back and do this again. What do you say?
I would absolutely love to do this. This is a great way to decompress it.
Oh, because, again, I'm sitting on my couch looking around going, I have to talk about this.
Right. Yeah, me too. Other than this, it would have been whenever we got together to record another episode, but then we couldn't because Paul is just now getting into the Game of Thrones.
Paul, catch up. Paul, catch up. So eventually, on this podcast, our Game of Thrones Senate podcast, there will be three of us, but until Paul catches up, there will be the two of us.
Absolutely.
And with that, that you've been listening to Three Geek Senate from Westeros. So I don't know if we're necessarily senators. We might be vassals. Three vassal, two vassal senates.
I'm the hand of the Three Geek Senate.
Whoa, where's that hand going? You keep that hand to yourself.
Hold on. I know where my hand is at. Don't worry.
I know where
it.
My hand is.
It's nowhere near you guys.
So for everybody listening right now, if you got thoughts, comments, please. Just feel free to write us on social media.
Definitely respond back. Let us know what you think. Do you agree with this? Do you disagree with this? How excited were you to see the dragon come in and lay waste to the army and see Daenerys in the back? Let us know what you thought of the season and what you thought of the the series so far. And hopefully we can catch up again next week.
For more geek nerdery, make sure you search for Three Geek Senate on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Or you can follow us on social media. Simply follow at 3GeekSenate. That's the number, 3GeekSenate, whether it's your Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
And we need you to go to iTunes and please subscribe. It's free. We need you to give us a review, 5 stars if you could, and share with your friends and let us know what you think.
And with that, this episode of 3GeekSenate, Senate is coming to a close. My name is Brian J. Cano.
And I'm Robert Buxar.
And we'll see you next time on the Senate floor. Good night, everybody.
Good night.